Ой, у лузі червона калина похилилася.
On October 22nd, Tom Bates shared his experiences in Ukraine, talking to about 25 attendees and 7 people on Zoom. Tom went to Ukraine in the spring of 2022 to do animal aid and rescue. He was often called on to extend that to humanitarian aid. He had a lot of amazing photos and talks us through some of them. Take it away, Tom.
And I just knew that I had something to offer over here because of my compassion for animals. And I could see everywhere in the news, everywhere, that nothing was happening except there was a war. No one was helping anyone. And it was attracting so many volunteers from around the world. I just felt like I needed to be part of it. So I reached out to a friend in New York City who is a world traveler, and he happened to be thinking the same thing. And we ended up going to Poland together for initially a week. We were going to go into it's Shamish, Poland, fly into Krakow, take the train to Shamish, which is right on the Ukrainian border. And we went to volunteer for World Kitchen or whoever needed any help. World Kitchen was fully staffed. The other people, I had already made my contacts with animal welfare organizations and had one in mind. And we ended up going over there. And we began walking dogs for a few days that had been brought in from Ukraine. And after that, my friend, who is a chef in New York City at the Waldorf Astoria, I moved on to his preferred volunteer work, which was cooking and feeding people. But I continued with this organization in Poland, and I ended up helping them organize their warehouse, because at the time there were so many goods coming in that it was just coming in and piling up. Nobody knew how to organize anything or had the will. Warehousing and logistics has been something I've done most of my working career. So I teamed up with another guy from the UK, and we went in and we organized our warehouse, got it up and running, and then we found another organization that needed their warehouse, same thing done. And so we went over there and did that for them. And while we were there, that's when I started meeting the people that were traveling into Ukraine. They were going in, bringing the animals in. A truck would show up at midnight, and it'd be full of dogs, some of them wounded, some of them sick, but they all got unloaded, came in, we cared for them until the veterinarians could come the next day. And this went on and on and on until one day it all ended. You could not get an animal from Ukraine into Poland unless you were the owner of the animal and the documentation was extensive. But anyway, at the beginning of the war, there was a lot of this going on. Then I started to go into Ukraine with some of the folks, and that's where I began to learn about what it is to do this, what it takes. And I like to improve on things that I see, and I saw a lot that could use improvement. And so that being one of my goals was to improve our ability to transport food into Poland and the kind of food that they need instead of bringing in things that they didn't need. Anyway, it all evolved into the 1 week I was supposed to be there ended up 3 weeks. I came back to the States after that, and I was here for a total of 3 weeks. My wife, Gretchen, and I agreed that I had no business being home. I needed to go back because that's where my heart was. That's where my head was. And so I returned to Ukraine. Returned for a month. I had a return ticket a month later, but that ended up being 4.5 months. And I just returned September 12th, and I'm returning October 30th. It's wintertime. All the seasonal volunteers are gone. It's going to get cold. It's already getting cold. Their temperature's quite like ours right now, but it's going to go the other direction while ours stays stable, freezing. So I need to go back over there and see what I can do to help with all the contacts I've made. There's shelters that don't have heat for the dogs. They don't have the food donations that they normally have. Anyway, that's what I'm going to be doing. The other part of what our organization, Canine Rescue International, does is rescue animals. And we also go into demilitarized villages outside of Kharkiv or anywhere that has been liberated by the Ukrainians. And we take care of the people and their animals. And we evacuate animals as requested and as needed. And it can be all kinds of animals that we end up with. Goats, ravens, hawk, falcons. There are times when you don't know that tank is just around the corner from you, and it'll let off a round, and it'll make you jump out of your skin, and then it takes off quickly to relocate its position so it's not found and destroyed by the Russians. Anyway, that's Kharkiv, and that has been our focus here recently because the city is devastated. When you go to Ukraine, you enter from Poland, you go to Lviv first. Lviv is a very old city, beautiful European city. It's Italian architecture. And you just don't feel the war there and as much as you do elsewhere. And then you move a little further east, you go to Kyiv. And the feeling is a little more diluted. And then you go into Kharkiv, and you're on another planet. There are buildings that are just destroyed. There's vehicles driving around without any lights on, the military. There's really no traffic laws being obeyed. You just get to where you need to go as fast as you can without killing yourself or anybody else. Everybody's fine with that. And when you're to experience life in Kharkiv as one of the residents, one of the citizens, we live with them. And I have been asleep. The air raid sirens come on. You hear the missiles hit a little bit down there. Next one's a little closer. And you know there's going to be a third one. And it always seems to be closer. And they sound close, but it's not that close until you hear the debris hitting from the explosion. I was there the evening the Russians had their, prior to recently, their largest missile attack on Kharkiv, where they killed 7 people in the dormitory and others down south. Ukraine is a different experience no matter where you go. And so let's get to a few photos here. We're going to look at my first few months there, March and April. This is a train station in Shamash. When we first went there, I had a hotel room right across the road from it, and I watched the humanitarian crisis unfold, all the refugees coming in. It was quite a ringside seat to see what was happening. At that point, there were 5 million people that came into the country. This is back in March. Go through it. Loading out of a warehouse. This is the beginning of war. We had a lot of donations, a lot of food, a lot of volunteers. We're loading up. Food came in. Food went out. They're going to Lviv. That's another one. One from Italy, I believe. And this is one of the warehouses we straightened out. This is a Polish organization. It didn't look like that before we got there. but that is the amount of food we were getting at the beginning of the war. We were just getting all kinds of donations, semi-trucks full. And it was a lot of food, a lot to deliver. Now, this is my first trip into Ukraine. This is in Lviv. We're at a house that is a shelter. And we rescued those guys. The people that I was with, we had 2 vans. Poland was not allowing the animals in at the time. So the plan was we were going to take the animals in through Romania, bribe the border guards, go into Hungary and Austria and Slovakia and into Poland that way. Well, it didn't work. I took off in another van, ended up at this place here, which is a wildlife center in Lviv, donated the food donations I had in my van. Create a relationship with these people that is very solid. These people are government funded. It's an NGO, and been helping me out, and I've been helping them out in turn. First experience, of course, is now. This one is from the Wildlife Center. They have all kinds of animals there, including raptors. And the raptors need a special diet. And that special diet is dead baby frozen chickens. And it's a thing. They lose a lot of chicks at the poultry farms, and so they freeze them. And they said I kind of looked like Colonel Sanders. So I brought them their order of dead baby frozen chicks. And most of the raptors are okay without them, other than the owls. Owls have to have them for their health. This is the third warehouse that I was at in 3 weeks. And this is one of the trucks that came in. And I think this one is probably from the UK. And we would have these guys coming in on a regular basis in the beginning of the war, and the food in, food out. It was very good. That's where I got the idea for the Department of Wonder when I was there. I don't know if how many of you know anything about Burning Man, but I have been going to Burning Man for many, many years, and I have a camp called the Wonder Camp. And we're a Department of Wonder. We fix anything. Everything you bring it, we will fix it or kill it, one or the other. And so we turned that into our logo for Ukraine. And it has, there's a lot of those stickers in Ukraine at the moment, a lot of vehicles. So anyway, Canine Rescue International is our charitable foundation. Department of Wonder is on the ground troops. We're the ones that go, or Department of Wonder van number one, and hopefully Department of Wonder van number two coming up. So anyway, that's where I came up with that. And every checkpoint I go through, they get stickers, and I've been seeing them on buildings, seeing them on rifle butts at checkpoints. Okay, so that was my first 3 weeks. And then I came back 3 weeks at home. We were supposed to go to Spain on a vacation. My wife realized, Gretchen, immediately that that wasn't going to happen. So we decided that it was best for me to return to Ukraine. And I went back there with some expectations that quickly faded. So I had to regroup. And that's when I decided to become an independent renegade, if you will, transporter of humanitarian aids and pet supplies and pet rescues. So what I basically did was anybody that needed help that could get a hold of me, I would just give them a hand. I would go out and grab a dog here, take it to the clinic, take a load of food to this shelter, whatever needed. And I developed so many contacts through that that it just took on a life of its own and ended up meeting Nick Tad with Canine Rescue. And we just, I introduced him to delivering to people. All right, well, these are just some photos of places I've distributed food. This woman had two Russian tanks parked behind her home that were destroyed by the Ukrainians, but that's another story. These people are up north of Kyiv. They take care of the soldiers' dogs. And so they make a request for the help, and we deliver that. This woman is in Bucha, where the atrocities occurred. And as we give out food, we like to, the only way to document what we do is take photographs. So we ask the people to put the food in front of them or hold it so we can show our donors what we've been doing. And it's even gotten to the point when I'd show up to certain areas that I've been before, and if I don't take a photo quick enough, they say, take my photo. Go on through these. These are cats down at in Dnipro. Another person we delivered food to just out on one of our missions. Saw this guy driving down the road, said, hey, you need a bag of dog food? And he got a bag of dog food. The military, they always have animals at the checkpoints, and those animals attract more animals. So they end up having a half a dozen dogs usually, and we're always giving them food when needed. Never take a picture of their face. In fact, you really have to try not to take any military photographs, checkpoints, et cetera, unless you're designated press and you have their explicit permission. Just some more deliveries of food. This is what we did. Going to these shelters. There's a shelter in Dnipro. These are all Ukrainians I'm working with. This fellow here, I picked up food off of his truck in Lviv and took that to Kharkiv as well. This is a picture of us down at a shelter near Slovakia. And we filled that up. That's in near Lviv, loading up humanitarian aid to go to Kharkiv from another humanitarian aid organization that was housing refugees. We work with the police, national police, and the military canine units. They don't get food from the government. They have to get food from donations. And that's why we're there. And the amount of dogs they have is crazy. Just to mention, there's two breeds of dogs you don't see over here that I saw a lot of over there. Asian shepherds and Caucasian shepherds. And if you don't know what they are, check them out. They're monsters. This is more military. This is one of my shelter friends down south of Kyiv. So that is just our general food distribution that we would do to shelters. And as we've been doing that, you find that it's great to do that, but the real impact is meeting the people, seeing the people up front in the demilitarized villages, even in Kyiv, the people that have lost their jobs. I mean, there's food everywhere in Kyiv, but half the people don't have money. And the government does not support the people at this point. It's all up to international aid. And the Ukrainian government at one time had the presidential humanitarian aid service, which was going to go around and distribute food. It happened once and then never happened again. People's homes are destroyed. There's signs up that says, call this number, we'll come put new windows in. Never happens. So it's up to the international community to help in these situations. Okay, now we're going to go through a series of photographs that were taken in Kyiv, north of Kyiv, and Chernihiv, and Kharkiv. We entered this area when I first returned in March and April. And you have to remember the war just started February 24th, and we were going into demilitarized areas right after the liberation of it in the Kyiv areas. So it's just a dog just happened to be there for the photograph. And more destruction, indiscriminate destruction. The amount of armaments, projectiles, shells, rounds is unbelievable. I have never seen such perforated buildings and fences and vehicles. One thing I would like to explain about that photo is that rocket shell, that has no ordnance in it. Those shells that you see sticking in the ground are just the nose pieces of the rockets. The rockets explode above the ground, and that piece will fly through the air, fly through your house. I saw one that went through one side of a little market, out the other side, and is stuck into the Coke machine on the outside. They can kill you, of course, but they don't have any explosives in them. People have. Just more, this is all Russian equipment. It's been destroyed. This was outside of Kharkiv before we went into a place called Feldman's Echo Park to do some animal rescue, but we were all just standing with a group of people going outside of the Kharkiv area. People trying to save their cars. Don't want it to get wet. Okay. Those are the two tanks that were parked behind that woman's house that we were giving food to earlier. Now, there was a graveyard of tanks between Bucha and Kyiv. Somebody had tagged them. So this is a picture of one of the projectile heads. And the next photo, I think, these are evidence of war crimes. These are phosphorus, like I said. And I just can't imagine what it would be like to be involved in something like that. The aftermath's bad enough. More apartment buildings.
A different apartment building.
Different apartment buildings. Yeah. They targeted the apartment building. We're inside that building at the moment. So all of this we had to navigate. Now this home here, the flowers made a great photo. We'll go to the next one. This house here, that was on the way back home from Dnipro, and that was a missile, cruise missile that was shot out of the air by the Ukrainian Air Force. It landed not too far off the road, and that's what remained of it. Now, there is a crater from a bomb from an aircraft that, best I can tell, they were trying to take the greenhouse out. There's nothing strategic there. That was from an aircraft. This building in particular is interesting. We had delivered food to that building a week prior to this. And the people and the animals got out. They were wounded, but they didn't die. But that was one of our staging homes in the village, and all the food burned up. Another missile attack on a little village that has nothing strategic. Interestingly enough, all the voluntary military, they come in their own vehicles and they paint them. And this could be from Lithuania, Estonia, Poland, Slovakia, UK, could be from anywhere. There's a lot of volunteer military involved. This was a site that I was taken to by our guide, that takes us into the villages. This was a Russian encampment that was destroyed by the Ukrainian military. It was spotted by our friend who is a hunter, and he directed the Ukrainians to it, and they took care of the Russians, and then they all went back in after the fact, and I was unfortunate enough to see all the photos of all the people that were not left alive there. These people here have a greenhouse that's to my back, and it's fine, perfect condition, operating, flowers in it, all kinds of floral stuff. And they said they were inside that greenhouse and could see the missiles coming over, and one hit their home. This is inside a sports center, and that was the last day of the kids at the sports center, and that's how they left it. So here we are, we're getting ready to go into Zirkuni. And the military isn't letting us in because of that. So we're hanging out back behind the checkpoint, waiting for the all clear signal, which would come later. Okay, so this photograph is from Zirkuni when we got in there later on that day. And we had just been in that area where the smoke is. It's just on the other side of town of the village. And we had a funny feeling that it might have been a drone that was targeting us. And later on, it was confirmed that it was, because they targeted us again. A few moments later, we did something really dumb. We had three vehicles and about eight people standing around in the open. We should have been parked under trees, under cover. There was a drone. And next thing you know, artillery came in, went over our head, exploded on the other side of the house, and another round came in. We were in our cars and out of there like, well, I compared it to Dukes of Hazzard, if any of you know that. Anyway, this is Zirkuni. Now, this is a scene of the crime in Kharkiv. This is a dormitory where seven people were killed. They call it a dormitory, a hostel, but what it really was a place for financially stressed people to live with physical impairments, hearing problems, any kind of problems in that way. And that's who they killed, were people that couldn't hear the sirens. Litharchiv, I spent so much time there and going into the demilitarized villages. I wrote a letter, and Louisa read it over the radio, and it was printed in the Key Peninsula newspaper, and I'm just going to read it. This is the best way for me to describe my time in Kharkiv. I am in Kharkiv, and I have experienced 3 missile attacks that have shaken the house I'm in. This happened 20 minutes ago. The windows are still intact, but the blackout drapes were blown in. I can't tell you how terrifying it is, indescribable. The Ukrainian family I am staying with are visibly shaken. They have lost one home to an attack and survived. They fear for another. The Russians are committing atrocities against innocent civilians. That is the truth, terrorizing and traumatizing the civilians of Kharkiv. No military targets. It's criminal. I can't remember how many times I've been here in the last 4 months. Nothing much has changed, except there are fewer people on the streets. The Russians continue to terrorize the civilians every night by indiscriminately firing missiles into neighborhoods, mostly on the east side of Kharkiv, but not always. I do know that I have driven over 24,000 kilometers within Ukraine so far. No driving at night, though. Curfews and blackouts are in force. The streets in Kharkiv are textured for tank tracks that make the tires safe. Today, we went to the demilitarized village of Sirkuni, just east of Kharkiv. We have been here before. The Russians occupied it at the beginning of the conflict, but the Ukrainian military has liberated. The Russians destroyed most of the village and have stolen whatever they could carry or drive off it. But buildings and homes remain don't have water, gas, or electricity. Yet many villagers chose to stay and take care of their property, their animals, and the animals left behind by the neighbors that fled. As we distribute humanitarian aid supplies, Ukrainian artillery is firing from behind our location over our heads toward the Russian front line. It is relentless. The villagers don't flinch, and neither do we after a while. We are advised to park our vehicles under trees by the locals. Russian drones have been seen and will direct fire at anything that appears to be assisting Ukraine, even humanitarian aid workers, especially humanitarian aid workers. The Russians want to cause fear and confusion so foreigners will leave and abandon Ukraine. Sometimes they are successful, mostly not. It's time for us to meet our Ukrainian contacts that will get us through the checkpoints and into Sirkuni. There is always a chance we won't be allowed past the last barrier. Our contacts have been doing this for quite a while now, and we know the brigade commanders, so our chances of entering the village are good. We rely on the Ukrainian military to help us make the decision to go in or not. We wear tactical vests, military helmets, just in case the Russians decide to strike the village again. There isn't a strategic reason to target Sirkuni. Nothing there but people and animals trying to exist. Yes, go ahead.
You mentioned at one point that you weren't able to take animals back out of Ukraine. I know that the United States was not accepting animals, but other countries were?
Yes, Poland was accepting, and Romania, and even some other European countries, but the influx was just massive, and there were bad actors, people that were taking advantage of the situation and not doing the right thing. And so that put an end to it.
So can you give us an idea of how many numbers of animals that you were bringing out, dogs, cats?
Out of a situation like that?
Yeah.
Usually it's a handful, like 4 or 5. When we go in there, we generally go in at the request of an owner, or someone has requested us, a Ukrainian, to come in and help with some animals. We don't go in looking. We don't go in taking any animals off the street unless we're asked to do it. We don't want to take somebody's animal. And so we just made the decision that we need to be requested to do it.
But when you were taking them back out of country and you had them, Did you have a warehouse with?
No, what we do is we get them to another organization that takes them to shelters in Western Ukraine at this time. There's really no animals going out of Ukraine now. Pretty much none.
Did you know Ukrainian language when you got there? How did you communicate?
Google Translate. I mean, I know a few words, but the good news is that everybody under the age of 30 over there pretty much knows English, sort of. They want to practice, and I'm the one they practice. Well, I think I'm going to start off here. I'm going to tell you guys about Feldman's Eco Park. When I returned to Ukraine the second time, I went out with a group of Germans. This was kind of my trial by fire, got my feet wet. And we toured around north of Kyiv and over to Kharkiv. But while we were there, we went to a place called Feldman's Eco Park. And it's a very well-known eco park throughout Ukraine, owned and created by one man, Mr. Feldman. And anyway, it's a huge zoo with a lot of interactivity for families and kids. But it was also the scene of some firefights, battles, whatever you want to call it, with the Russians. And some animals were killed, many survived. And after the initial conflict on that side, people were going in and rescuing animals, bringing out llamas, bringing out all kinds of creatures. We got permission from the military to go in there. The military was here. Feldman's Eco Park is here, and the Russians are here. We're kind of in undisputed or disputed territory there. So we were told to go in and get out quick, and which we come to do. So anyway, we went into Feldman's, and we split up to take a walk around to see what we could see. I did see an alpaca that was still in a stable in the corner of the park, and there were some dead animals as well. So I'm just going to run this film behind me. This is us coming out of Feldman with a goat and a raven. Anyway, the 2 days before we entered that park, the Russians came in. They killed the park attendant. Caretaker, stuffed them in a toilet. Two people came to look for them later on, killed them, put them in the toilet. We came in and did this. One day later, people came in to rescue some of the animals that were left, and a 15-year-old boy was killed by a Russian rocket attack. His parents were there with him when it happened. If I ever did anything I would think was stupid in Ukraine, this might have been it. We probably shouldn't have been there. We agreed that the alpaca was bait, could have been mined, could have been sniper, we don't know, but it was interesting that it was the one that was left and it was in the corner of the park. And so anyway, we did manage to bring out this goat and the raven. They had put all the animals that had survived in one cage that was an aviary, but it was full of pigs and goats and ravens, and these were the only two we managed to get out. So this is Feldman's Echo Park, and these are some of the people, of course, that I was working with, Ukrainians and Germans for the most part. And English was not a very common language going on. So I'm living on my translator as well, trying to figure out what's happening next. Yeah. But I learned a lot of what not to do, and a lot of what works. And that's all you can do when you're there. You just pick up on the stuff that seems to be working for everyone. Anyway, people cry when you mentioned Feldman's Echo Park because so many people spent so much time there with their families. Here's what I got here now. I'm going to just run. You want to run through these? These are just animals. Some of the animals that we've run across. I don't think we have anything graphic in here. The animals in these villages A lot of them were abandoned by people that fled. Some neighbors said, I'm not going. They stayed. They found their neighbor's dog chained up in the backyard. Other people asked for their neighbors to take care of their animals, but left and didn't leave them with any resources, any money, anything to feed them. And then sometimes the owners will say, will you please evacuate my dog for me? And you kind of get graded. Okay, how come the dog was left there? How did it get left there? What did you do for the dog to help it survive while you were gone? And sometimes it adds up, you don't get your dog back. We don't know where your dog is. Your dog has probably been adopted and taken somewhere else. Have to make some decisions that way. But generally, the animal, that one rode on my lap all the way across Ukraine last night. That one.
With that expression?
Yeah. You missed a turn. What this really all boils down to is that I went over and made myself available to whatever happened. And what happened was I got involved with this animal rescue theme, and I met people everywhere that were like-minded and were there to help and do the same things. And I really felt that with NICTAD and Canine Rescue International. I really operated much better by myself. I'm not big on groups of people, convoys. It's one of the most terrifying things for me is to have to travel in a convoy on a highway. But anyway, having met NICTAD and Canine Rescue International, we're going in and doing what we can, thinking on the fly, taking advantage of opportunities that present themselves, such as feeding the humanitarian aid packages to the people in Kharkiv, just accidentally running into somebody and talking. And next thing you know, they're filling up our truck once a week with humanitarian aid going into Kharkiv from their refugee school near Poland. The networking is pretty incredible, and it's become obvious to me that everybody in this pet rescue, animal rescue, feeding, volunteer sort of business, we end up knowing just about everybody that's doing it in that. And there, and the people that are left are few. And the donations are seasonal. The war is on for Americans until you turn off the TV. Then it's over. The Ukrainians are getting nothing from Ukraine. It is all us, international efforts that are feeding the people and the animals in Ukraine. It's pretty hard to describe what I see, the desperation, but the stoicism that no one but the Ukrainian people can have. I don't know. How about we open up some questions?
You said that the people and everything, they're not getting any help from the Ukrainian government. Is that because the Ukrainian government has to throw all its energy into the war?
Correct. Okay. And for the most part, they make an appearance of helping the citizens. And Ukraine is still a corrupt country. Ukraine was corrupt before, still corrupt, maybe not as much with Zelensky in office. But if you have connections, things happen for you. If you don't, nothing.
Why aren't more countries providing humanitarian aid?
The countries do.
The people here that
provide money, but it is to the NGOs that bring in the aid. I have learned to not always trust the large NGOs or the large charitable foundations. They are slow to act, and the amount of money that they require to fund their administrative costs is quite high. When it comes to Canine Rescue and myself, it goes straight into the fuel tank. It purchases food. It purchases medicine. It purchases water, and we distribute it. I I've driven over 40,000 kilometers in 4.5 months in Ukraine. That comes up to about somewhere around 25,000 miles. And I figure almost $9,000 of fuel in the vehicle I was driving in that time period. I raised $9,000 myself through Indiegogo, and I've raised some more money to help me survive over there. But that's how I operated. Staying with people I meet, eating out of the grocery store, fuel first. If you don't have fuel, you can't deliver the food. You can have all the food you want, but can't get it to them, and you're stuck there. And in the beginning of my experience in the war there, fuel was hard to get. They had rationing. The queue lines would go for days to fill up your car. There's a lot of black market fuel that was being sold. And you had to plead for diesel fuel sometimes. I had an interpreter, young Ukrainian lady, travel with me in the beginning of that period. And she got us fuel quite often when we needed it, just by standing in the middle of the truck stop and saying, "Won't anybody help us?" And then they'd say, "There's an American." Things usually got better, but it was hard. It was very hard. We, many times the military would let us get fuel on their ration cards. And then one day Ukraine said no more exporting fuel, and the crisis was completely over. It was like somebody threw the switch. So now fuel's quite available, but I don't know about this winter with the power going out and everything. And regarding this winter, what's happening is Ukraine, they have enough gas, they have enough infrastructure to keep everybody warm, electricity and water when it's operating. When the Russians blow it up, that's when everybody's out. And that's when they're rapidly trying to fix this stuff. But if it takes 5 days, or 5 days with the power, without water, without heat, that's the danger of this winter. And so many of the shelters that have to have heat for the animals won't. And the reason they hadn't blown up the substations before, and the power station would, well, maybe I'm mansplaining this a little bit, but is because they wanted to capture them. And they also wanted to save them for when they would make the biggest impact, destroying them now, not in the middle of summer.
The question is from someone who's here by Zoom is, how do we get money to Tom?
Ah, oh, excellent question. Did you have a list of organizations?
I have a very short list. very
Canine,
short list.
Caninerescueinternational.org.
And the other one is my personal PayPal account. And the other organization is WARF.org. It's another foundation here in the Northwestern Canada that we work closely with, for Animal Relief Fund. They dovetail right into what we're doing. Their goal is to come into Ukraine and help sterilize the animals, which is going to be the first step towards taking care of the problems Ukraine has with their animals. They came in this summer and sterilized somewhere around 8,000 animals in 3 weeks. People from the Northwest, from Amsterdam, from South Africa, a group of vet techs, and they are raising money now to come in next year into Ukraine in the Kharkiv area, and their goal is 300,000 animals. And why that works so many ways is that if they get a clinic to help them do this in Ukraine, they pay that clinic $9 per animal that gets spayed or neutered. And if they do it mobile, an owner brings in their animal, they will pay them the same thing and give them food. So there's an attempt to re-educate people in Ukraine on how to care for their pets and what it means to be a good animal owner. Then there are other opportunities that we do. One of the things that my interpreter said to me and to Louisa in an interview is one thing the Ukrainians want is they want work. They want to help. They want to be able to be part of helping their fellow Ukrainians. And so I found out that it is great. The best thing I can do is empower the people I work with in Ukraine. And one of these things came up in Kharkiv. There's a pet food manufacturer, cat and dog food, and he had shut down his plant because of the war. But we got him to reopen, rehire, start remanufacturing food. And now a lot of these organizations, charitable foundations, are buying their food from him. This is was our goal. We employ people, we buy their products, and we feed those products to their animals. It's a beautiful situation. I wish we could do it that way for all of their industries over there. But this is one case where our goal has been met. And we didn't even know we had a goal until it happened. So it's a beautiful thing when you can support them economically. Yeah, I just want to say thank you, everyone, for coming out. But most importantly is that I'm just asking you to help spread the word. Take some of those cards. You know the people that would be interested in this story. You know the people that would like to help. And if they can't afford it, that would be great. But and if you can't afford to help us financially, at least make other people aware of what's going on in Ukraine. It isn't always what you hear, and it certainly isn't what you see. Okay, two fascinating stories. The first one is one of the projects I worked on was, and I dubbed it, the Kitty Cat Underground Railroad. Out of Dnipro, you saw those disabled cats, and there was a woman, Elena, delivering food to. Anyway, it's a big cat shelter, and we would take cats into Poland from there to an adoption group in Austria. And how it worked out was, at the time, you could bring five animals into Ukraine, but they had to be brought in by the owner, and they all had to have their animal passport. And so everything was legal except the owner part. We would get volunteers from Lviv, say, I am the cat's owners, and we would get them across the border, and then they would go back to Lviv, and the cats would go to Austria and be adopted out. And we did this a number of times, and quite often, they were always women, and they never spoke English. And we would be in the car together for 3 to 4 days, living off the translator, which always made it a memorable trip. The other funny story is in that town of Zirkuni, when the Russians were there, they looted a sporting goods warehouse, and then they left. They took everything they could carry. And we're sitting, I'm there, and I'm watching all the local villagers come in and get out, but they're all on brand new bikes. Yeah, that's what happened. They went and helped themselves to new bikes after the Russians broke into there. And one last thing I do need to say is, one takeaway from being in Ukraine during this conflict is the men are defending Ukraine. They are protecting Ukraine, but the women are saving it. The women are saving Ukraine. They are doing all the jobs that the men used to do. They are the ones that are putting themselves out front in these organizations. And I have never seen so much energy from the Ukrainian women into helping animals survive. It is a very amazing thing to witness.
I would like to thank our sponsors for this event. Radio Tacoma, KTAH-LP, KTQA-LP, Advocates for Immigrants in Detention Northwest, NOAA's Pet Project of Tacoma, the Tacoma Friends Meeting, in the Fellowship of Reconciliation. You can still donate to Tom in several ways. Remember that all donations go directly to Tom. There is no middleman. There is no administrative costs. Websites that will take donations for Tom are caninerescueinternational.org. That's the letter K, the number 9, RESCUEINTERNATIONAL.org. You can also donate to Ukraine War Animal Relief Fund. Their website is uwarf.com. Thank you so much.